Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Too Deadly Mob, welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NIRS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calls on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Now, Kimberley Kidney Health Breakthrough means residents no longer choose between staying home or saving their lives. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Vicky O'Donnell, CEO of Kimberley Aboriginal Medical Services Limited, on the line. Vicky, very good morning, my sister. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, brother?
I'm very good, very good. Thank you for coming to the program, sister. Let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
I'm a Yingana woman from the Derby area, born and bred in Derby, and have still got five generations living back home, but yes, currently live in Broome.
Good. Keep the generations going strong, my sister. Thank you. Now, talking about the breakthrough here means residents no longer choose between staying home or saving their lives. Elaborate on the breakthrough there, please, my sister.
So currently right now we dialyse over 160 of our mob, and that's a couple of the non-Indigenous people that live in the Kimberley. We dialyse it weekly, over five acute clinics across the Kimberley. But for any new person who comes onto a dialysis machine in the past, have had to have go to Perth to do the initial time on the machine. And with this new breakthrough, it means that they can now do their time in back home.
Back home, exactly.
Transition into our units.
Bringing the mountain to the people, so to speak, aren't we?
Most certainly.
Yeah,
most
which
certainly.
Is very important. I mean, especially with our mob in remote areas, we tend to get missed, don't we? And we're talking about saving lives, aren't we?
We are, and it's only increasing. So we were fortunate to be awarded a tender last year, which is $97 million over a four-year period from the state government health department to deliver acute renal services and some of the chronic disease stuff across the Kimberley to our mob.
And look, we're talking remote. It's hard to get the stuff there, but money that's given to us by the government is a good investment in saving lives.
Most certainly. And I think one of the challenges we have is that in the workforce area, we don't have a lot of Aboriginal of our mob that actually do the training in the renal area. So there is a real shortage across Australia, particularly in the renal area, and we really want to start to improve and build the workforce, particularly in our units, that we're training up Aboriginal health workers and particularly Aboriginal nurses and Aboriginal doctors in that field, because a lot of them go into our clinics and into hospitals because renal is really specific.
Of course. Yes. So there's an opportunity there for our young ones who are in high school at the moment or about to go into university. What we're saying is, and here's the plug, is look at health, the medical industry for our mob. And, of course, there's going to be plenty of work there, so there is a great opportunity, yeah?
It is, yes. It still means that some of our mob living in our towns where our units are, as opposed to maybe living in Halls Creek, and they might be dialysing in Cunnamarra, and that's where they live. But the other part of the puzzle, I suppose, is that we were fortunate that the state government built four 20-bed dialysis unit hostels in those towns, so that our people are in specific areas and have got accommodation, which has been a beneficial to us too.
Yeah, look, thanks to the $97 million boost from the state government, increasing the number of people that can be treated in Kimberley by a third. And like I said, any money put in this space, it's an investment. It's not an expense of taxpayers' money, yes?
Yeah, and I think what's really important is that's 160, and we will, over the next year or so, go up to 180 a week that we're dialysing. And when you think about that, that's 180 that it would have had to have lived in Perth, away from home, away from family, to get the dialysis. We didn't have those units in the Kimberley.
Yeah, so fantastic. How long have you been working in this space? How long have you been the CEO of Kimberley Aboriginal Medical Services?
Close to 7 years, and prior to that I was the CEO for the Derby Aboriginal Health Service for 12 years back home.
All right, okay.
Where we established the first dialysis unit inside our clinic. The AMS funded it itself so that we could at least dialyse 4 of our people back home, and since then we've now got a beautiful building that's next to the AMS in Derby that dialyses over 40 a week back home.
Vicky, look, a beautiful footprint there and the work that you're doing there. My sister, they say if you're doing something you're passionate about, you won't work a day in your life, and it sounds that's the case with you, Vicky.
Exactly. We still have plenty to do.
Of course we do, yes.
This has been a real breakthrough that people don't have to go to Perth to do their initial 3 months. They can actually do it back home, which is encouraging because a lot of them don't want to go to Perth for the 3 months.
Exactly.
It means leaving families, you know, and it's a cost to them as well.
Well, and when you're talking about the physical work that needs to be done in regard to the dialysis and what have you, but spiritually they're broken because they're away from their country and their people.
They are, and it means they're living in a hostel in Perth, and it does cost money because they're still paying rent for houses that they've got back home.
Yes.
There's extra expense. They've got no family, and it does spiritually. It's the well-being is not for the heart and soul for them, for our mom.
And you need the heart and soul, the spiritual part of it, the spiritual part of it, to be strong because it helps in regard to the better of their life.
Yeah, and. You know, the sad part about it was in the past, if any of our mob went to Perth, our people were passing away in Perth.
Yeah, exactly.
They have the opportunity to be able to dialyse back home, live longer, look after their health, when they do come to the palliative stage, they can be still looked after by family at home as opposed to passing away
in the country they don't come from. Fantastic. It's good to have a good news story after what we've been through regarding COVID-19 and black deaths in custody. It's good to have some good news and doing a great job there. And a big shout out to your deadly team there, my sister.
Thank you so much.
And we'll yarn soon. You take care. Stay safe and keep doing what you're doing, my sis.
Thanks, brother.
Bye, Vicky. A beautiful yarn there. Vicky O'Donnell, her name, is CEO of Kimberley Aboriginal Medical Services, and talking about the Kimberley Kidney Health Breakthrough means residents no longer choose between staying at home or saving their lives, and taking the mountain to the people, so to speak. So dialysis machines are now in communities, and which is fantastic to see, and a long time waiting, but it's all happening now. So very good, deadly good news story there. Have you say your mob, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, that deadly number 1-800-422-416. Call the number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trevor Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. I'm taking right up to 12 noon Queensland time. Do add to the conversation. Too deadly.
missed you. It's time to keep on moving before the rain begins to fall. It's when I'm chasing rainbows I seem to lose my way. Do you think I can make it? Do you think I can take it? All I ever wanted was a simple life. To have you by my side is all I need. Why do you have to be so far away?
Sebastian here, hanging up on our national talk flag, your big yarning shirt, BBM 98.7.
Yeah, Two Deadly Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bummer, Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We're going across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Now, I'm going to catch up a yarn with Judith Ryan online, AM, Judith Ryan AM, Senior Curator of Indigenous Art at the National Gallery of Victoria. The National Gallery of Victoria to present world's largest exhibition of Tiwi art in 2020. On the line, Judith, very good morning. How are you? Judith's not there. We'll try and get her back online. Lost her there, and we'll have a yarn with her and talk about the fantastic presentation exhibition for the Tiwi art in 2020. You'll say, have you say, 1-800-422-416. We're going across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service, and you can have your say on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Like I said, we'll try and catch up with Judith Ryan, AM Senior Curator of Indigenous Art at the National Gallery of Victoria, and got on the line. Judith, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. And how about you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. You're based, of course, down in Melbourne, Victoria.
Yes, well, you wouldn't believe it. The sun is out. It's going to be 16 today, so I'm really happy.
Is that right? Because I was just about to say, I'm sitting up here in my shorts and singlet having a yarn with you.
Oh, I bet you are, far north Queensland. Yes, but we've had some rather miserable days, and of course we're back now in COVID.
Exactly, second wave, and thoughts and hearts going out there to you, mob down in Victoria, with this yucky pandemic. But we all need to abide by the rules. That's the only vaccine we got at the moment, and abiding by the rules and make it all good. But tell us about this fantastic world's largest exhibition of Tiwi art. I'm really excited about it.
This has been a dream of mine for many, many years. This exhibition of almost 300 works and over 70 artists. It ranges from 1911 to now. So it covers over 100 years of Tiwi art.
Beautiful.
And culture. And the exciting thing about it is we've been able to borrow a lot of historical material from important collections, the South Australian Museum, Museum Victoria, the National Museum, the Art Gallery of New South Wales. So we have sort of important material collected by Baldwin Spencer, Charles P. Mountford and other major collectors over many years. But the thing about Tiwi art is it's unique.
Of course it is.
To Melville and Bathurst Islands.
Now, beautiful. And so to curate all this, how did it all start? I mean, everything starts with a thought. And and when we're talking about Indigenous art, look, it's a powerful tool in regarding education people of the world, telling stories. So I think it's a nice fit for NGV.
Well, look, I think this whole dream started many years ago when I started at the NGV. And one day I discovered our Pukamani poles, which were made in the late 1950s. And they are what we opened our building with in 1968. They were on loan, and that was the only Indigenous art on display then in 1968 in our new building. When I discovered these, and I was just beginning my work in 1977 at the NGV, I thought, wow, such fabulous, huge ironwood sculptures with adventurous designs painted on them. And thinking about other forms of Indigenous art, it's really, this is unique to Melville and Bathurst Island, these incredible poles that are made for the Pukamani or mourning ceremonies and then are left to the elements as memorials to the deceased.
Well, art tells a story, doesn't it? And we're talking about 60,000 years here, you know, and it's great as you as a curator can see this, and it's sad that a lot of people don't see it, especially non-Indigenous people, you know. We as First Nation people, well, we live with it, and it's spiritually connected to us, and it's great that you've grabbed the bulls with both horns, so to speak.
And the thing is that in my curatorial role, the great thing that's happened about Tiwi art is that once Tiwi people met Murrintawi or non-Indigenous people, they wanted to share their culture and they wanted to tell the stories that these works tell. And so early collectors such as Spencer in 1912 made a huge collection for Museum Victoria, and then later Charles Mountford, and then we had Tony Tuckson. But the thing is that for Tiwi art, Tiwi artists are inspired because when they make work for ceremony, innovation is encouraged. So in carving Pukamani poles, and women and men carve, or in making tunga bark baskets, or in painting the body to disguise the ceremonial participants from the mapatiti, the bad spirits of the deceased, they are encouraged to use their own designs, to be innovative. So when they made transition to new materials, that is, painting on individual sheets of bark rather than folding them into bark baskets, or painting on canvas or on paper, making screen prints, making ceramics, making batiks, which is all in the exhibition, each artist is still finding and making their own work and developing their own style.
Look, and we're strong believers in regard to our ancestors, and the spirits are still with us. And so as artists do their work, there's input spiritually, and it comes to fruition.
Yes, and the great thing is we have collected and selected works in all media from 1911 to now. So we have Pukamani poles that range from 1912 to 2019. Then we have tunga from 1911 to 2019. Then we have canvases.
Yes.
We have figurative sculptures We have ceramics. We also have a new video work that was made by the artists of 25 Tiwi artists at Chilimara Arts and Crafts Association. And this is an incredible video work in which each of these 25 artists is filmed on their country performing their individual dance with their individual body design, and then there's the song that is sung. So this video enables our visitors to hear Tiwi language, which is so important for the maintenance of culture. And these sounds will sort of permeate through the exhibition. They can also see that each of these artists is associated with a particular country.
Yes.
So they'll experience the Tiwi Islands, the natural sounds, also the sounds of Tiwi language, and be able to work out that in this exhibition, just as in the dance, because to sing is to dance is to paint, is an essence of Tiwi art and culture. And this is sort of something that is shared by other Indigenous people, of course, as you would know.
Yes, exactly. What's the engagement in regards to the Indigenous artists themselves in regard to the exhibition?
Well, we've had a consistent liaison and engagement and consultation with the Tiwi artists of all the four art centres of the Tiwi Islands. And there has been a great and long-standing consultation, particularly with Pedro Wanamiri, who is really my point of contact and reference for matters of protocol, language, spelling, orthography, but also
cultural engagement, very important.
Yes, we needed to get permission for all of the works, the historical loans, to be exhibited and illustrated in the catalogue, and also the whole sort of concept of how we were dividing the exhibition up. They were very, very sort of strong that they wanted the story, the creation story of Brookapali sort of very strongly evident in the first room, so that people would get the essence of Tiwi culture.
Yes.
And then the idea was that it was not going to be linear, but it was going to sort of oscillate between old and new and back again. So we have customary media, then we go to new media. We have historical works with new works. So the point is, no one is thinking that this culture is sort of stuck in time. We're thinking always of sort of the dynamic diversity and the innovation as we walk through.
Fantastic. And when does the exhibition kick off?
The exhibition will open now on the 13th of November and close on the 8th of March. We have delayed it for 2 months as a result of COVID restrictions.
Exactly. And look, with exhibitions and the possibility of the art pieces to be sold?
No. The works, well over about 60% or 70% of the works belong to the National Gallery of Victoria, and the others are all in public and private collections through Australia. But what people can do is purchase the book that accompanies the exhibition. And this is a 330-page book full of essays by Tiwi, Indigenous and other scholars and writers.
And the true stories and true words from the artists themselves.
Yes, that's right. We have some very important Tiwi essays, but we also have important essays by people who have worked on the Tiwi Islands, know the artists intimately, and have studied this as something that is dear to their hearts.
Okay, fantastic. Judith, how are you operating under the COVID-19 stress at the moment regarding EGV
and the
exhibition?
I'm under prolonged house arrest at the moment.
Are you really?
We have been asked by the Premier to work at home.
Okay. Yep.
And unless we desperately need to go into work, for which we have to have permission in advance, 2 days in advance now, we are working at home, and we are devising new programs to make the collection visible on our website.
On the website, okay. And what's the website?
All of our collection, by the way, is accessible on NGV Collection Online. So when you want to look up Tiwi or other Indigenous artists, please go on, and it's illustrated and visible what is in the collection.
Fantastic.
But there's also a lot of other programs we have been doing, videos, NGV channel, we're doing interviews, we're doing lectures online, because in this new challenge, we've had to devise new ways of going forward and getting the collection out to people who may not be able to visit the NGV.
Exactly. Well, the same thing even happening up here in Cairns with the Cairns Indigenous Art Fair, CIAF. We're operating with social media and using the tools that are available in the 21st century to expose all this fantastic art.
Well, the point is, this is a sad thing that this is the year that I won't be there for CIAF.
Okay,
it's always a great celebration, and particularly the spectacular opening and the dances, and also the coming together of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. It's really great, and what I like is its focus on Queensland, where you are on the Torres Strait.
Yeah.
I think this gives it a special feature that's very, very different from the other, you know, from Telstra and from Tanundi and other great events that we have in this nation of ours.
Look, they're powerful platforms across the nation in regard to showcasing our art and telling our stories as First Nation people. Like I said, educating people of the world, and also business opportunity for our artists as such. And it's a great platform, a great industry, and great to be talking with you, Judith. And thank you very much for sharing.
Yes, well, thanks very much. I hope some of you will be able to come down and see the exhibition, or if not, get a catalogue. And we are presenting some online programs to go with it as well.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you and your team. You stay safe, and we'll yarn soon, Judith.
Yes, thanks very much. Lovely to talk to you today.
You too, dear. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Beautiful yarn there. Judith Ryan AM, Senior Curator of Indigenous Art at the National Gallery of Victoria, and talking about the world's largest exhibition of Tiwi art in 2020. So do check out their webpage, National Gallery of Victoria, and go to the Tiwi art section, and you'll see all the beautiful artwork. And COVID-19 has raised its ugly head again in Victoria, second wave, and a lot of suburbs have been closed down because of it. But we can still look at the beautiful artwork from the Tiwi art at the exhibition at the National Gallery of Victoria online. Too deadly. Have you say, Mob Yana Strong, add to the conversation. 1-800-422-416. Yana with the ball, you're on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns as BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS. Yana up strong to do add to the conversation. And like I said, we are taking you across the nation via NERS, and a very powerful tool for our mob. So do add to the conversation. Look, we're going to catch up a yarn with Bernie Dean, Industry Super Australia Chief Executive. Almost 500,000 Australians have wiped out their super savings. So that's the topic we're going to have with Bernie Dean on the line. Bernie Dean's not there. We'll try and get him back online. So we have a crossover with all our lines at the moment, and the panel's going crazy here. But we are juggling in regards to the work that's upon us, which is great. Good conversations here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. And I'll just try again for Bernie Dean, Industry Super Australia Chief Executive, and talking about how 500,000 Australians have wiped out their super savings. Probably not a good position to be in. On the line, Bernie Dean, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you going up there?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Where are you based, Bernie?
I'm down in Victoria, so I'm not going to be seeing Queensland for quite a while.
Thank you. That's right. Yeah, sorry to hear that.
Your Premier's locked us out, and our Premier's locked us in.
Well, she's protecting us, and she's doing her job is what we're thinking. But, you know, we're sad at the affair that's happening with you guys there in Victoria. And even all the AFL teams are moving out of Victoria based at other states and territories.
I know. It's shocking. I won't get to see my beloved Bulldogs beat any of those Queensland teams.
That's it.
Anyway, that's part of the reason why you know, so many Australians have tapped into their superannuation, because this whole COVID thing has disrupted everyone's life.
It has.
But one of the things that kind of concerns us is that out of that 500,000 Australians that have kind of tapped into their super and taken the whole lot, a heck of a lot of them, about 80% of those, so about 400,000 of them, are under the age of 35. And the whole idea of super is that you put little bits in early all the way through your life, but the little bits that you put in early in your working life, they're the most important. And if you take those out, you're going to end up with much, much less down the track. And that means that you won't have that nice nest egg to add to the pension. And that's not bad just for them. But what it means is that the rest of the working population have to then pay more in taxes to support more people on the pension.
And well, exactly. A vicious circle.
It is, yeah. And that's what super, you know, 30 years ago, superannuation was set up. They made it compulsory, so that it was set up so that everybody would get a little bit on top of their pay, put into an account each week, each month, and then when they get to the end of their working life, this principle of preservation. So it said, we know it might be frustrating, but if we know that if we don't have these rules about preserving it for the future.
Well, back then they were saying, Australian government was saying, you mob cannot save, so we're going to make you save.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've got a couple of teenage girls, and I know that if there's chocolate in the cupboard,
that's gone.
It's gone. You know, and I was the same when I was growing up.
Well, exactly. Well, we're creatures of habit. We just got to change our habits. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, yeah. So we're a bit worried about this. We do know that a lot of people are hurting, and that they need money to get them through. But what's different about this is that the government programs seem to kind of be really hard to get in some cases. So like the JobKeeper payment, whereas people's own savings that are meant to be there for their future, a lot of people have just been getting them, I think, because they can.
Sure.
And not because they've lost their job. There was a
study. So the government has given us the thumbs up, the permission to access our super, but some people, is what you're saying, have abused that situation.
Yeah, so there was right from the get-go, we were saying to the government and to the tax office that they should put in some reasonable requirements.
Sure.
The government did come out and say, you know, if you've lost your job, absolutely you should tap into your super, or if you've lost income and hours. But what happened was, at the tax office, it was a self-declaration. So all you had to do was to tick a box and say yes. Mm. And there was no checking.
Yeah, which gave easy access to the monies.
Yeah, that's right. And then we were kind of going, oh, I don't know whether this is going to end well.
Exactly.
So we saw about 2 weeks ago there was a study by one of those big kind of like research accounting groups, and they analysed the bank transactions, so the actual money going in and out of a person's bank account in the first couple of weeks after people got their hands on their cash. And what they found was pretty disturbing, that there was quite a lot of people using the money for mortgage repayments, which is a really good thing because
kind
of helped, all that. But then there were spikes in things like gambling.
Jet skis or jewellery Air Jordans.
That's right. Yeah, sneakers. There was a couple of retailers from sneaker shops saying publicly about 2 months ago that they'd seen a huge spike in demand.
I was only joking, but there it is.
No. It's a thing, you know. Like, and you get these young kids. They want to be at the. They see it on the internet, and you know they want to be
looking trendy. Fashion. Keep up with the time.
Yeah. Right.
It's all about reputation, brother.
That's right. And we're saying, you know, that's good, but we don't know whether the super money is the right way to go. We're hoping that the government, at the end of, I think it's the end of September when this scheme closes down, that they kind of say, well, let's get back to normal.
Sure.
And hopefully...
When that money's gone, Bernie, the money is gone. So you can't pay it back, but who's going to do that? I mean, Yeah, they did it to pay the bills, or they did it to splurge, but the money's gone. It's, you know, like, if you save in the next 5 years, same amount of money you saved in the last 5 years, where are you going to be? Nowhere, you know?
That's right. So there's two things I'd say about that. Firstly, it is gone, and if you're back to zero, it's not a good position to be in when you're about 25 or 30. But there's the good thing is that those small amounts that go into a person's pay packet on top of their into their super account on top of their pay, they continue. They're locked into law, and about 10% of your salary, and that's going to keep on going up between now and 2025. Now there are some people, and some of them are federal politicians that sit there in Canberra behind a nice desk. Mm-hmm. They get 15%. Wow. On top of their salary, and
for their superannuation.
They get 15% superannuation.
Whoa.
And some of them have been saying that we should freeze, we should stop people, ordinary working people, getting any more. And I'm kind of going,
whoa.
Well, this is the only way that people are going to kind of like rebuild their savings.
Exactly.
And they've taken 20,000 out. That's a bad thing, but we've got to. And we recognise that they're not going to be putting it back in, and we can't expect people to be putting more of their own money back in.
Mm.
It's got to be those small amounts that are already in the law that go up from 9.5% to 10% to 12% by 2025.
But even if the government did a sum more for a certain amount of time, when we get out of this, let's lift up the percentage of monies going to superannuation to try and cover it back, even if it is for 12 months, and then go back to normal thereafter, something to that effect.
It's already there. It's already there. So it goes up. It goes up next July.
Okay.
That'll be the first time it's gone up in about 5 years.
Okay.
It's gone up very, very slowly for ordinary people, but it seems to have gone up pretty fast for those federal members of parliament. So you've got those federal members of parliament getting, I think it's 15.5% on top of their good coin, their good salary, and some of them, unfortunately, are saying that there shouldn't be any more for ordinary people.
But Bernie, I think you would agree. 99% of all politicians would not have accessed their superannuation during COVID-19 because they were still getting paid, and living their life.
I think you're right. I cannot think of one federal politician that would have felt the need to tap into their super because their job, which we all pay for, was propped up.
Exactly. And let's talk about the elephant in the room. For people who did access their superannuation in regard to just ticking the box, some of them fraudulent. And there's a fine for that, is there not?
Yeah, there is. Well, there's two things. There's a fine, but there's also some additional tax that you could pay. So in the last 2 weeks or so, the Australian Tax Office, who are very good generally at taking money and not generally good at giving out money,
exactly.
They're really cracking down. So they've told people that if you haven't applied and you're thinking about applying, only do it if you know that you qualify. So if you've lost your job or you've lost 20% of your hours or your income, then that's only when you should apply.
Mm.
For people who make a false declaration, so they're starting to use that sort of like legal language now.
Yep.
They're saying that if a person makes a false declaration, two things could happen to them. Firstly, they could be fined up to $12,000 for making the false declaration. And secondly, and this is the stick in the tail, they'll say that what you've taken out of your super account tax-free, say $10,000, we will now tax that at your marginal tax rate. And that could be anywhere between 20% and 35%. So you might end up actually having to pay the tax office a big tax bill.
And a fine.
And a big tax bill. And so I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody, especially people who might even be doing it a bit tough. And it's the last thing you need, to have a new tax bill coming out of
Well, exactly. But the other thing is, I see COVID-19 probably an angel in disguise in regarding financial intelligence. This is an opportunity for us to get financially intelligent, look at our future, and if something like this happens again, then we're ready for it. You know, no one plans to fail. We just fail to plan.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we've noticed in the last couple of years. I've been working in super for over 7 years now. Mm. It's generally a bit of a sleepy hollow.
Okay.
Not too many people spend too much time thinking about it.
Mm.
But as you say, the good thing about a crisis like this is that people really start thinking about their financial security, and especially for the future. And that's a good thing. We've seen a lot more people take an interest in what type of super fund they're saving with, what sort of fees they might be paying, whether they've got more than one account. Because if you've got more than one account, then you should be combining them into one.
Sure. Do a bit of homework, so to speak, you know. And the old phrase, no good being the wealthiest person in the cemetery, but it's the other way around as well, is get that balance in life.
Mm, that's right. And so out of this, I think I saw a study today, about 25% of people actively thinking about what sort of fund they're saving with, and that also flows through to things like are you getting your best deal on your mobile phone, or are you getting a good deal from your energy company? Like I think that everyone's kind of sharpening the pencil a bit here.
Sure. Like I said, which is a good thing, Like I said, we are creatures of habit, and we're running with the same habit that we've had for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But anybody at any moment can start a new future, It takes 30 days to create a habit, so we need to create some good habits. That's all it is, Bernie, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And then the payoff is tremendous.
Of course it is.
And there's the one thing that kind of always surprises me a bit is that when it comes to superannuation or retirement savings, when you get to your end of your working life, whether that be because your body breaks down or you get to the retirement age, only 1/5 or 20% of your savings is made up of the stuff that your employer put in on your behalf, your contributions.
Yes,
80% is made up of all of those. The compound interest each year, as things roll from year to year, and you get those little bits, especially the ones when you're 20 and 30, that 5, 10, 20, 50 bucks a week, the benefit of those things over time is in the interest that it generates. So 80% of your nest egg is made up of all of the earnings, and only 20% is actually what you put in. And that's why super is considered such a really good idea and a good financial investment.
Well, it's money that's going to an account that you can't touch, and then you're building interest on that. So you do reap good benefits, of course, from that.
Yeah, you do. And you'll penalise significantly if you break into the piggy bank, like the amount of times.
The government gave us the thumbs up to do that because of COVID-19. Now people are in desperate need of finances for their future.
That's right. We do regular surveys of the community, and I think it was around about 70% of people were able to kind of see the sense in closing this scheme down. They were saying, there were some people in hot water, they really needed some help in February, March and April. And now what we need to do is close this scheme down as quickly as possible and get back to that idea that the cupboard, put your chocolate out of reach.
Yes.
Put your money out of reach. Otherwise, you gorge yourself.
Yeah, big time. Look, a very important conversation, and thank you very much for sharing, Bernie. Your advice is, if you don't need to touch your superannuation, don't touch it. And if you have touched it, then do what you can to put it back. And also now start focusing on your finance and where your money's going. That's every dollar.
Exactly. Couldn't put it better myself.
Beautiful. Thanks for yarn, Bernie. All the best to you and your deadly team. Look, stay safe and enjoy watching the AFL from home. And we'll talk soon, my friend.
I will. I'll get up there and meet you in person after this. After
sounds
this
good.
Gone. I'll get some sun.
Go to Bulldogs. See you, mate.
Cheers.
A beautiful yarn there. Bernard Dean, his name is, Industry Super Australia Chief Executive, and talking about almost 500,000 Australians have wiped out their super savings. And look, COVID-19, thank you, was the main culprit because of that. But some people did step over the line and regarding didn't control their urge to grab the monies, thinking it is their money. Well, it is their money, but in retirement age. And if they did do it, then they're down in their super. And if they did it fraudulently, then they may be getting fined for that. So hope you're doing due diligence, checking with your tax accountant for before you're doing that, and it's about making the right decisions. That's what it's all about. Add to the conversation. We've got about 8 minutes left here on National Talk Black. Keen for yarn, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Baldy and Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev, Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. Us, BBM, Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we've got Cross the Nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. 1-800-422-416.
When the nights are cold and lonely, my thoughts are of you. I guess you're feeling all alone. Well, I'm feeling it too. I just need to hear your voice softly saying I love you. When those shades of darkness fall on me, girl, I'm thinking of you.
Shades of Darkness, Ron Naden. Big shout out, Ron Naden. This is your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Give the Murray call. Let's have a yarn. We've got Selwyn. Good morning, brother.
Good morning, brother. If you'd be forgiven if you said what planet you're from, if you ask me that. But anyway, brother, I just come back from Hall Health down near Tobruk Park.
The swimming pool.
I tried to get back real quick for the program.
Yes.
And I don't know if you called it a bucket list, but I'm pissed off because I missed the taxi 007. I wanted to get that.
James Bond.
And the other one, brother, I'm pissed off. Bloody called me from Summer Bay, brother. That's why you can say, oh, I don't know what kind of you're from. I don't know what that. I don't know what that. But anyway, brother, I think it's a depiction of real life, brother. He's a bullying. And as a matter of fact, my 22-year-old was crying when we married the four of them. They were going back to take their ashes back to country, back home. And they got arrested at the airport and called me with the fellow that arrested them. And anyway, there it is. White privilege. That bully man called me in the show. He married that Sheila Bella. They're from the same mother, but he cold-bloodedly married his father. But what's that got to do with real life? Malcolm X said that Western media would always portray the oppressors as the hero, i.e. The cowboy and Western movies. And I'd like to take that Marcia Lankin gave a few years ago. She was talking about Crocodile Dundee, and they're focusing really close when Sue Charton was saying, oh, one of the photographed Devil Bell, or David Galpel. But they said, oh, you can take my photo. I said, no, because you got a lens on. A lens cap on. And what it does, what she says it does, it shows the mainstream public why they're people of color and why we're white. It always divides people. That's what it shows. Brother, a big thumbs up to Family Rules. We're following that too. I love Danielle. I love your old grandmother too, and she got 9 daughters and good on you. I like Danielle, and I respect her because she grew up growing up, but it's about 3 years down the track now. I love that show. It's a thumbs up for me, and all the eyebrows and whatever. I look at that. But yeah, brother, On Port Announcer too, brother. Channel 9 sucked there, brother. And you know they're losing the blueprint in Aaron. Like I said before, Aaron.
Donald Trump. Yeah.
Their blueprint was divide and rule. But they're uniting all the people of color. They're uniting us by running everybody down. And she criticised those people in the Housing Commission. She'd been doing it for First Nation people for years.
Exactly.
But the first time she had a shot at people from overseas that live in those Housing Commission, and they sat there. But she said, bugger all about those white people off the Ruby Princess, brother. She said, bugger all, brother. But anyway, it's uniting us as people of colour. Thank you very much, brother.
Thank you, my brother. Beautiful. True words. Someone there, regular caller here on your daily program, National Talk Black. You can do the same, but you may have to do that tomorrow because Murray's going to sign off here now with National Talk Black. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that daily number, 1-800-422-416. And there's a text line as well, 045-714-0550. And that's 24/7. And then our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. But thank you very much for coming. Mob, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe. Adhere to the rules that are in place and regarding COVID-19. There's no vaccine, so we need to still do what we need to do. Queensland, thumbs up, doing a fantastic job, thinking of your mob there in Victoria, but we need to do what we need to do to keep ourselves safe, your mob. Thank you for your time. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and stay safe.
Nils provides a safe and affordable alternative to payday loans or rent-to-buy, products which promise fast cash but often compound a person's financial situation. Loans up to $1,500 are available. Repayments are set up to an affordable amount over 12 to 18 months. There are no fees, no charges, no interest. To be eligible for NILS, you must have a healthcare or pension card, earn under $45,000, $60,000 for joint applicants or people with children, and you must be able to repay the loan. NILS is based on trust and respect. To inquire about Nils Loans, call Shaq in Cairns on 40807400. That's 40807400. Shaq is a local Nils provider for Good Shepherd Microfinance.
Station sponsor.
Hey, what you doing, your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
You know what?